Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. You know, for the most part, people are good and trustworthy, but unfortunately, there are some that are looking for an opportunity to take advantage of others. It's bad regardless of who's targeted, but what about when it's kids or the elderly? You know, certainly with school just about over for the year, a lot of kids will be spending more time online, and that can lead to some trouble. And while it's really sad to say, older folks are often the victims of a variety of scams that really try to play on their vulnerabilities. Well, we're fortunate to have some really passionate and knowledgeable people working on consumer protection on behalf of all of us. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Sandy, always great to have you with us.
Good morning, Judith. It's nice to be here.
And Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Judith. It's always a pleasure.
Well, and as always, we have lots of topics to cover that people will want to be aware of to be able to protect themselves and those they love. You know, on both ends of the age spectrum, kids and elderly people often seem to be the target of unscrupulous people. And we want to make sure that all of you listeners get a chance to hear their information and also ask questions. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a question or a comment on our Facebook page, and that's The Larry Mueller Show, and Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Well, Sandy, as we were saying, kids will be out of school soon if they aren't already, and that likely means for a lot of them more time spent online during the summer. What are some good general tips for keeping kids safe when they're online?
Well, probably the most important thing is communicating with your child. And really, we're talking about kids 12 and under here. But, you know, the most important thing is to ask them what they're doing online and talk to them about what kind of sites they're visiting. You know, if they're having chat, you know, sessions with people who's on the other end. There are so many things you can do as far as purchasing software that filters websites. There are things that you can do to actually monitor the sites they visit, and you know, it tracks and you can monitor that. But really, it all boils down to you as the parent carefully overseeing what they're doing online and setting boundaries for the children. You know, we don't get so much into the sexual predator type thing, which is, you know, a huge concern for parents as well. But we're concerned about it more from the potential of privacy. Mm-hmm. And children will often follow a link that takes them to a place where they can download some fabulous game, you know, and instead of a game, they infect your computer with some kind of malicious software, which can be very dangerous. So those are some basics, mm-hmm. As far as what you can do as a parent to monitor what your kids are doing online.
Well, and Michelle, I think one of the issues that we deal with kids is that we're really living in a time of oversharing in general with Facebook and other social media, and that's the world that the kids have grown up in. But really, you know, having those conversations with them about privacy and what's okay to share and what's not to share, because they might not put all the dots together that, you know, sharing could lead to, for instance, identity theft.
Exactly. But they're old enough to be communicated with. I mean, have the conversation and explain what can happen, that what you post stays there forever. You can't get it back. They understand that. Explaining, you know, all the large capital letters is yelling and screaming. So those behavior issues, but that if you say something mean, it's out there forever and that sticks with you, so that those actions have consequences, that there are people out there collecting information about you so they can try and imposter being your friend. And, you know, you have the stranger danger conversation with them when they're younger. This is the online version of that same conversation, but about their personal information and identity. They are understanding money and banking and what's happening there. So how your identity relates to that money and banking and going forward in their futures. I mean, kids think about their futures a lot earlier than they used to.
Well, and you were saying, Sandy, that, you know, these are especially things for, say, 12 and under, but I think 12 and under, you can kind of say, okay, these are the rules and these are what you need to follow in order to be online. It gets a little trickier as the kids are older, and not only are they maybe on a computer, but they're also on a smartphone and they're texting and you're not seeing those. And maybe they have limited, you know, they've figured out that they can limit how much you can see on their social media thing. What kind of conversations would you have with those older kids?
Well, being careful about those unsolicited emails, texts, ads that are on social media that, you know, offer you a free iPad, you know, that can lead to identity theft or, again, having your phone or your computer infected with a virus. Another thing to get across to the older kids is, you know, there's danger in posting information. I know my son, who's in college, understands that it is not a good idea for me to post my maiden name on my Facebook page and then have him listed as my son. Mm. Because, you know, mother's maiden name is often one of those security
questions.
So, you know, just basic things like that. Something else I want to mention about the under 12 kids. Here's another way for parents that parents should be involved. Maybe they don't understand this. There is a federal law that requires any website that's targeted at kids that captures their personal information of any kind, whether it's name, email, whatever, that federal law requires parental approval. And so parents should be, you know, actively involved making sure that they have approved these websites that their kids are on and their kids are not posing as the parent, you know. And another problem is that some of these websites capture that information without requiring the parental approval in violation of federal law.
And so how should a parent, what should a parent be asking their children to be able to make sure that those sites are complying with the law?
Show me the websites you're visiting. And, you know, you can go in and track and look at what websites your kids are visiting. But certainly if you have, and, you know, kids are online now from age 3. Mm-hmm. So, and at that age, you probably should be sitting beside your child and watching very carefully what they're doing.
Now, we've been talking about, you know, that sensitive information that could be captured and used by unscrupulous people. Why is it that children or young people are, I think, the fastest growing group for identity theft? What is it mm-hmm. about that information that is so attractive? Michelle?
It's clean information. It's never been used. It's the cleanest credit history that you can get your hands on if you're an identity thief, and you can do a lot of damage. It's also a social security number that isn't checked for credit monitoring regularly because it's not an active number really in the mindset of the child or the parent. So
they're not using it for employment and things like that.
Right. It's not, they're not getting credit cards. They're not opening bank accounts regularly or doing any financial things with that number. So what parents need to do to help their children stay secure in the financial area and identity theft is run a credit report on their child's social security number to make sure they get no report back. That's what they're looking for. They don't want to receive a report that shows their credit history. They want to get nothing back. That means the number hasn't been used. So when you order a child's credit report, they'll typically run it name and number. You can ask them to run what is referred to now in the industry as a manual search. That means they'll run the number independent, not tied to the name, to
because
make
maybe
sure
someone else is using that number
with a different name. That's the synthetic identity theft. It's trade name. So you could just, that way they're running just the number to make sure that that social security number hasn't been compromised at this point.
Right. We ask parents to go out and check to see whether their child has a credit report. And if there is a credit report, that means there's a really, really big problem. So The question has been, what can we do proactively to prevent your child from becoming a victim of identity theft? And a bill has been introduced in the state legislature. I believe Representative Theisfeld from the Fond du Lac area is the author. But it would require those credit reporting agencies to freeze the social security number, you know, or credit history of a child. And that way you as a parent could be assured that if somebody tried to compromise that social security number, you would be notified, and you know the potential thief would not be allowed to do that. So that would be an important step forward
and
on preventing
that,
this.
Would that legislation make it mandatory that all children's or are frozen,
well,
or would you have to request it?
The parent would have to request it, and there are, you know, it's. You know, there are quite a few steps. You have to prove that you are the child's parent or guardian, you know, providing social security numbers and birth certificates, et cetera. But it certainly is a more proactive way of addressing this issue instead of just waiting and hoping that nothing happens.
Right.
Yeah, because right now a parent can't put a freeze on because there is no credit report. And so they can't just call up and request this security measure because there's no file that should exist for that child. So this would make them establish a report that was clean so they could freeze it.
We're talking about consumer protection and current scams to watch out for with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller, and you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a question or a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. Now, going to the other end of the age spectrum, seniors are unfortunately often a target of scams and fraud. And one that you've been hearing about is a medical alert device robocall to seniors. What's going on with that, Michelle?
Well, what we have seen is that consumers are receiving a telemarketing call. They make it sound legitimate in that there's background noise and shuffling of paper and things, and they're saying that they will deliver to you free a medical alert system or some medical equipment that will benefit you, and it's free. What we're finding out is that the equipment costs $35 a month to operate. They've never ordered it. The consumers don't need it. But they have options to hit a button, just like all of our other favorite robocall programs that are out there, and they're trying to obtain information about you, get whether it's credit card information so they can do charges or social security numbers or whatever it is. But they have an option, so you can hit a button to no longer get the call, hit a button because you're interested in this. And again, it's they're trying to get information, identify that your number is a live active number so they can pass it along to others and continue to keep you in the scam ring, and you'll get many other calls as a result. But this has hit the entire state in a large impact of consumers that have received this call.
And the notes I have here say that the companies or whoever it is seem to use a rotating list of names, including Senior Emergency Care, Senior Safety Alert, and Senior Safe Alert, all very generic names that sound like they could be a real one.
Absolutely. They've also put the medical term in there, you know, medical safety alert, something of that variation as well. On the phone number, if you have caller ID, it often looks like the call is local as well, that it's coming from the 920 area code, the 608-262-414, all of our local numbers. So we believe that they're spoofing the caller IDs, which is trying to put a false number on there so it looks like it's a local number coming in.
And do you have any sense where these calls are actually originating?
At this point, we're doing that investigation piece.
And Sandy, would you add anything about what, in general, with these possible phishing calls, these robocalls, what does the Bureau recommend as the best way to deal
just
with them?
Just remember, if your number is on the no-call list and you get an unsolicited call like this caller is breaking the law. So that right there is a red flag, and you think to yourself, hopefully, why would I want to do business with this company? It probably is a scam of some kind. So that's number one. And, you know, we have so many of these, and the pitch varies, you know, but the bottom line is usually they will ask you for a credit card number in order to get some kind of advance fee, and then you never get the promised whatever it is. Or they will ask you, if you press one of those buttons, they will ask you, you know, how much credit card debt do you have, and just collect that kind of information that will be sold on to other telemarketers who are also pitching fraudulent goods of some kind. So what we advise is whenever you get a robocall, just hang up, because it's 99% plus sure that it's a scam of some kind.
Is it even better not to pick up if you don't recognize the number or if it looks suspicious? Because just even picking up, doesn't that give them some indication that it's a real number?
Probably not.
Okay.
It's, you know, that's why they ask you to push a button, mm-hmm. which identifies your number as a live number. Yeah, just hang up, and whatever you do, don't press a button, because that will lead to further calls.
We're talking about consumer protection with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection here on The Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Unfortunately, being savvy consumers is something we have to really think about pretty much all the time, because there are a lot of opportunities for people to take advantage of us, whether it's with robocalls or inappropriate business practices or offering something that sounds too good to be true and probably is. But we are lucky because we have people at the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection looking out for us. And two of those people are here today. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen are here. Happy to answer your questions when you call 1-800-642-1234. And Sandy and Michelle, Judy in Madison has an issue she'd like to talk with you about, so let's go there. Hi, Judy.
Hi, girls. I've been receiving for the last 3 months about four different Spanish magazines that I did not subscribe to. Has my name on it. My last name is close to a Spanish name, but I don't speak Spanish. And some people were telling me, I've just been giving them to a Spanish friend that I have, and somebody said, well, you better write to them because you're going to be charged for all of these. And I can't believe that, since I never ordered it and I don't speak Spanish. So could you tell me about this?
So, Judy, you have not gotten a bill for it yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Michelle, what do you think?
Well, if there's no bill and you're not being asked for payment, well, great, you're getting a free magazine. There is a law that says that you can't be sent something you didn't order and then that the business demand payment later for it. So if you don't want to receive them and keep giving them away, you can write the business and tell them to stop sending it to you. If they don't honor that, you can file a complaint with us. If you start to get a bill for it, then you definitely need to communicate with them so they don't try and do any collections action. Write the letter, tell them you don't want it. And again, if you have no success, file a complaint with our agency.
And do you think, Sandy, that it might be good for Judy to be proactive? And I'm assuming that there's a masthead or something on the magazine, like contacting their circulation department?
Right. That is a good idea. And a lot of magazines will have kind of an announcement or bulletin about these fraudulent companies that are selling subscriptions in their name. Usually it's the opposite. You order something and then you,
and
don't,
then you
get
don't
it.
Get it instead but of not we, ordering it. And
we do
it.
Have a law on the book for this specific instance. So,
and I was thinking, if Judy does send that, I would say probably a hard copy letter would be a good way to go, and that way she would have
a record
proof
of her
saying
actions.
I mm-hmm. tried to let you know this and you didn't do that. So, is that helpful, Judy?
Yes, I was just wondering, though, if they did go into collection agency and so forth, would this ruin my credit rating?
Just take the action. Judy, if you get a bill, then start, if you haven't already communicated with the company, do that right away and tell them you didn't order it. If you already had, file that complaint. It takes a bit for them to go to collections. There's rules about whether or not collection companies can follow through on illegitimate debt and things. So,
all right. Thanks for that call, Judy. And let's go next to Linda in Madison. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because periodically I get applications in the mail for opening charge cards, which I haven't solicited. And I was looking at one of the forms because I really want to opt out of this. And it says if you want to opt out, you know, and it gives you this number to call. And I called it to see what would happen. And one of the questions they ask is you have to enter your Social Security number. So I just hung up because I don't want to give them that information. Or it says you can write to one of the three companies like, you know, Equinox and TransUnion, those companies. So I want to opt out of this so I don't get any more of these. So I want your suggestion on how I can do this.
Okay, great. Thanks for that question, Linda. And I think most of us get those solicitations fairly often with offers for new credit cards.
Here is the web address to do this. It's optoutprescreen.com. So optoutprescreen.com. Or you can call 888-5-OPT-OUT. And they will ask you, you know, personal information. They may ask you for your Social Security number. And if you're a college student, it's really a good idea for you to do this because you will get dozens of these a day. And, you know, college students tend to move around frequently. And if those pre-screen credit card offers don't keep up with you, it's really easy for somebody to take one of those and use your name and get a credit card account set up in your name.
And it's going to an address that you're no longer
right,
at. And,
right.
So why don't you give that information again, Sandy,
yeah,
just so
the,
we have
The phone number is 888-5-OPT-OUT.
Okay, 888-5-OPT-OUT to stop those. And that's really good advice for all of us. Thanks for that call, Linda. We had an email from Yoli. My daughter is applying for apartment rentals, and some of the applications request that she give her bank account number. Is this a regular procedure?
I can't say that I've heard of that as a standard practice. I can see where changes would occur. Once you are confirmed as being the tenant, I could understand where they probably want to do a bank account number for automatic withdrawals to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. That might be their practice. So during the application process, I would ask if there's a way you can just give the bank and permission to verify that you have sufficient funds without giving your bank account information until you're confirmed as the mm-hmm. tenant. And then ask them how they're going to secure it if you are the confirmed tenant and decide to follow through on renting there.
Right, because I'm sure it really varies wildly between different landlords how much they think about keeping that information protected.
Exactly, yes.
And let's go to Bridget in Madison next. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I have a question. It seems like in the last year I've had people sort of knocking on my door to door in the early evenings, trying to, like AT&T recently stopped trying to get you to change your cable coverage, or I think I had an Edward Jones representative at one point, and I think this is like a newer marketing technique, and I wonder if you could speak to it. I mean, should we be checking people? Should we not talk to them? Is it legit?
Wow. So that was not the kind of person at the door that I was expecting. So, Sandy, in general, what's your advice for situations like
that? I also had a visit from the Edward Jones representative. Yeah. So it does seem to be growing in popularity in addition to the usual alarm sales and transient contractors who offer to blacktop your driveway. You know, it's really up to you as a consumer whether you want to engage in these people. I, you know, as a woman, am always very leery of standing there with my door open and talking to these people when I don't know who they are. In most municipalities, door-to-door salesmen are required to have some kind of permit and display them. So that's one thing you can look at to make sure that, you know, they at least have taken the time to get the proper credentials in order to sell door-to-door. But what we've been hearing lately is that, you know, these door-to-door salesmen tend to be extremely high pressure. And, you know, those are the kinds of people that you don't want to deal with. And one thing I always tell people, especially people in rural areas, is remember you do not have to invite these door-to-door salesmen into your home, because once they're in, it can be very, very difficult.
And they're kind of counting on that politeness and hospitality.
Right. You know, one thing you can do is contact your local police department or sheriff to see whether they know about these people. And we've done that, and the sheriff will say, well, we just chased them out of another township. So, yeah, you know, you're right to be cautious about this tactic. Otherwise, there are rules that we have in place that protect consumers. One important protection is the 3-day right to cancel. So you as a consumer have 3 days to kind of rethink if you signed a contract for something. One thing I want to mention that's happening right now is these transient crews that come through, and a lot of them follow after a storm, after hail damage or tree damage. But what we've heard in southeast Wisconsin, Brookfield specifically, there's a transient crew trying to sell blacktopping, and, you know, they'll take their payment up front and typically use very inferior quality materials. So if you have been victimized by a storm and need roof repair, siding repair, if you do need your driveway blacktopped, you know, check with friends and neighbors. Use a local company, somebody that's going to be around, you know, in 2 weeks if you have questions about warranties and things like that. Because every year we see these transient crews coming through and people do get ripped off.
And often I think they say like, oh, I'm doing a job down the street and I've got some extra blacktop so I can do it cheap for you. And, you know, basically, you know, so often it comes down to if it sounds too good to be true. It is.
Absolutely.
And you get what you pay for.
Exactly. Right?
Or even worse than what you pay for. We're talking about consumer protection, current scams, and how to protect ourselves and our identities with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They're happy to answer your questions, too, if you call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Now, you know, we were talking about those robocalls, and, you know, if a company is not abiding by the no-call list, if you're on it, that's a signal that you probably don't want to be doing business with them anyway. There is another deadline coming up for registering on the no-call list, right?
Right. If you're on the state no-call list, remember it's only a 2-year registration, and we have quarterly deadlines, and at the end of every quarter, that updated list is sent to every company that's registered to telemarket in the state so they know not to call your number. It takes like 10 or 20 seconds to sign up your number. You can do that by calling 866-9-NO-CALL. Or you can go online at nocall.wisconsin.gov. And remember that you can register your cell phone numbers. So make sure that every cell phone in your family is registered and on the list. We just this week had a settlement with a Wisconsin company that was violating the no-call list. This is a company in the Fox Valley area that sells vinyl windows. And over the period of time we looked at them, they made over 1 million calls, and about half of those, so the 500-some thousand, were to people whose numbers were on the no-call list. So they paid a substantial civil forfeiture, and going forward, they now are not registered to telemarket here, so they're not making any calls. But before we will approve them as a telemarketer again, they'll have to put together a compliance plan, making sure that controls are in place so they don't call numbers on the no-call list. And then every every quarter will look through their phone records and make sure that they're in line with the law.
Wow, that's a lot of calls.
It is, but with today's, you know, internet calling technologies, it makes it really easy to blast numbers. And so it seems to me that when companies violate the law, they do it big time, and they're calling hundreds of thousands, if not millions of numbers that are on the no-call list.
Wow. Well, the Federal Trade Commission released some really startling fraud statistics last month. All of you listening, I hope you're ready for this. In 2011, the Federal Trade Commission estimated that 25.6 million adults, that's over 10% of the adult population in the U.S., were victims of fraud. That is astounding to me, Sandy.
It really is amazing. It's a staggering number. But when you think about it, we are awash in fraud. And there are so many avenues that it comes at us. Telemarketing, we just talked about that. Internet, social media, email, text. It's just amazing the different avenues these crooks have to get at us. What was interesting to me is that the median loss that consumers reported in this survey was $100. And one of the problems we have as an enforcement agency, we get about 10,000 formal written complaints a year that we take action on. But we know that's only the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. And we obviously can't go after the crooks we don't know about. So this survey is a more complete picture of the extent that fraud is out there with us.
And what is the definition of fraud? I mean, is it that you pay for something that you don't receive, or what does fraud mean exactly?
It could be anything, okay. But it's defined in our statute as unfair, deceptive, or misleading tactics that result in a loss to a consumer.
Okay.
That $100 median loss is also interesting because the criminals are very careful at where they set their price points, just like, you know, legitimate marketers. And you think about the average person probably could take a $100 hit and not report it to the police or to us. So, you know, these crooks are really, really mm-hmm. smart in how they operate.
So they're basically kind of hedging where the threshold is of what will really, what at what level people would be so upset or it would be such a loss that they would actually do something
right.
about it.
And a lot of times the people who file complaints with us have lost tens of thousands of dollars. And, you know, so we're really glad to hear from them so we can do something about it. But, you know, preventing fraud for us is just absolutely the key. So much of this crime originates from overseas, so preventing fraud and having educated consumers in the state is much easier and a better strategy than letting the fraud occur and then trying to track down the money, because chances are that is not going to happen.
And some of the areas, just to let people know, kind of some of the most frequently reported areas of fraud in this survey by the Federal Trade Commission. Weight loss products were the top one, which was interesting. Also, prize promotions, unauthorized billing for buyer's club memberships, unauthorized billing for internet services, then work at home programs, which, you know, that's the earn, you know, $2,000 a week in at home, 10 hours a week. And then it's interesting because a bunch of these are all about your own finances. So there's the work at home, but also credit repair scams, which is ironic mm-hmm. since it's probably going to affect your credit, debt relief, credit card insurance, business opportunities, and mortgage relief scams. So these are really, it sounds like they're really going after people in some really vulnerable areas of
sure.
their financial
and
lives.
They understand what's happening in the economy and that a lot of people are carrying a lot of debt. And so a lot of these scams are targeted in that way.
And it also, some of the other things that they found were that African Americans and Hispanics were victims of fraud at a much higher rate than Caucasian people. And also consumers who were more willing to take risks and those who had recently experienced a negative life event like a divorce or a death of a family member, an injury or an illness or a loss of a job were more likely to be victims. And again, you know, really targeting those people at their most vulnerable.
Right, when they're distracted with other life events and issues and don't have time necessarily for all the details and fine print on a situation.
We're talking about consumer protection with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller, and let's go back to the phones and Dennis in Red Granite. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. A few years ago, I found a way to stop the credit card applications. When I would get a credit card application, I would save it. When I'd get a second one, I would mail Bank A's application back to Bank B, Bank B's back to Bank A in their own self-addressed envelope. But my wife seemed to think I can get in trouble for that. Is there anything illegal about that?
All right. So basically, Dennis is sending one bank the other one's application and vice versa. Michelle?
Nothing illegal that I'm aware of with that. I guess it's a creative solution to trying to get them to pay attention that you don't want to receive their materials. So.
And making them pay at least a few cents for that return business envelope.
That's right.
All right. So probably not going to end up in jail, Dennis, is the consensus. Let's go to Becky in Milwaukee. Hi, Becky. Becky?
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I just had a question. So I grew up with, you guys are talking about social media and online scams and stuff like that. And I grew up with social media, and I was there for all the privacy changes on Facebook. But I have a lot of younger cousins who didn't grow up with that, who are posting questionable information. And I also know a lot of older women that I work with who won't even join because they sort of have this idea that no matter what I do on Facebook, my information is going to get stolen. So I just had a question. I was wondering if there's any educational, like, I don't know, privacy or security things that span across those age gaps.
That's a great question, Becky.
Yeah, there are a lot of really good websites that are targeted specifically at kids and teenagers. And we have an outreach specialist in our Office of Privacy Protection who actually goes out and does presentations for like mothers and daughters and explains some of the social media stuff. Michelle, could I ask that she call you about some of these websites or...
Yeah, absolutely. Just call the hotline number, 1-800-422-7128, and ask to be transferred to myself, Michelle Reinen, and we'll hook you up with a presentation or the written materials or whatever it is that you need that way.
I think that's a great idea. And like Becky was saying, you know, there really are opposite ends of the spectrum of people, you know, younger people that might not realize there's any problem and older people who think that everything's a problem.
You know, I'm on Facebook and I'm kind of stunned at the number of people who feel that they're obligated to make their birth date private. And I just, you know, that's very valuable information to a criminal. So you really have to think through what you're sharing on Facebook.
Great. Well, thanks for that call, Becky. And it's great to know that there are those kind of resources available for education and helping us all be a lot smarter consumers. We are talking about consumer protection with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers. And we would welcome your calls at 800-642-1234. More great information coming up in just a moment. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, it's time for Garden Talk, and Doug Soldat, who is a turf grass specialist, will be with us. He'll have some great ideas for how to make your lawn more sustainable, how to deal with weeds that are probably going crazy with this cool and wet spring, and when is a good time to fertilize for the first time of the season. Again, that's Garden Talk tomorrow at 11 here on the Larry Mueller Show. And today we are talking about consumer protection, and we have lots to cover, including a question from Sandra in Madison. She says, I have frozen my credit report at all three agencies to prevent identity theft. I would like to take a look at them just for peace of mind. Do I need to pay the fee to unfreeze them just so I can look, or can I just order my free annual report? Michelle or Sandy?
You should just be able to order your annual report from each of the three. You might want to space it out over time so you are doing regular checks on your credit report to make sure you're getting that consistent monitoring throughout the year instead of just once a year. But the freeze doesn't interfere with the annual check that you can do.
And that's a good point to just review, that we are all entitled to a free credit report each year from each of the three agencies, correct? Sandy, what's a good way to make sure that what should we be looking for, first of all, when we get those free credit reports?
The way you get your free credit report is to go to annualcreditreport.com. You can also do it by phone and by mail, but it's more cumbersome. You will be prompted to enter your Social Security number. You know, that's kind of how they track this credit stuff. But what you should be looking for are any credit card accounts or loan information that you don't remember setting up yourself. And if you see something like that, you should let the credit reporting agency know immediately. And then you may have to take further steps if you believe you're the victim of identity theft, filing a police report, making sure that you don't have unauthorized charges on your credit card statement, and checking with your bank. So, but that's what you look for, unauthorized accounts that you don't remember setting up.
And I'm assuming, Michelle, that if someone is part of a couple, that each of them should be checking their credit report, not just one person, because something might have been opened in, say, a husband's name, and it wouldn't necessarily show up on the wife's credit report.
Absolutely. Each person, own individual, should be getting their credit report and doing regular monitoring of their credit history. If you're a couple, yes, there could be responsibilities back and forth there, and something could show up on the other spouse's or partner's information, so you do want to do that regular monitoring. In addition to the credits that might be out there, extensions of credit, bank, credit cards, check the addresses. Make sure that the residence history is accurate as well, because if there's an address out there that you've never lived at, that could also be an indicator that mail under your name or social number is being directed somewhere else, and that could be the start of something. So pay attention to that as well.
I know we've gotten questions from listeners in the past, and that's a good point to bring up. People have asked, because your credit rating can be affected by hard credit inquiries, there's been the question of whether asking for those free credit reports impacts your credit rating.
No, that should not impact it at all. It's federal law that gives you that right to view your credit report free. So
there's no downside to asking
for
those at all. Great. Well, let's go back to the phone and John in Mequon. Hi, John.
Good morning. I have a question regarding nuisance calls. I've been living with one for a month, and I'm wondering, do I continue to live with it, or is there something that the department can do for me or put a complaint in? And here's what's happening. Six calls a day I get, two in the morning, two in the early afternoon, two in the late afternoon. The two calls come in probably 2 minutes after each other, and the phone number displayed on my caller ID is a nonsensical number, and my computer search suggests that it's a spoofing number, some fake number put on there without any identification of who these people are. And there's no message left on my answering machine. My wife has just been picking up the telephone and slamming it down. But they are persistent. I mean, it's been happening every day for a month. Is there anything that I can do besides wearing them down in their persistence?
Good question, and I can imagine that's really quite annoying. Michelle, what do you think?
John, I would file a complaint with us and provide us with the information that you're seeing on your caller ID. And sometimes we have means of matching that with other information where they may have gotten a phone number. I'm not saying this is what it is, but what we saw with the senior alert calls is it wasn't just the phone number. It was also another series of numbers before the phone number that appeared on people's callers' IDs. And so as we collect data and capture it from consumers, we're able to make different connections through our investigative methods. And this may be the start of something that could help us connect different pieces together.
Terrific.
But the practice of spoofing a number is a violation of our state law, and we just changed one of our rules to make it very, very clear that that is a violation of law.
All right. Thanks for that call, John. And staying on the telemarketer topic, there's a question from Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois. Is there anything within individual telemarketer calls that would allow you to opt out of that caller specifically as opposed to registering for the kind of blanket no-call list? So is there a way to say, I don't want calls from company X, but I don't mind getting the other ones?
If you are a Wisconsin resident, our law says that you can contact an individual business that's been calling you and tell them you no longer want to receive calls from them if you're not part of the do not call list, the no call list. So it sounds like you might be in Illinois, and you'll need to check on the Illinois laws as far as that goes. But then also federally, if you can, there's some similar protections under federal law that if you contact them and say that you don't want to be called, I'd put it in writing so you have documentation to follow up with. You can make the phone call to the company to find out where to send that information.
All right. And let's go back to the phones and Bob in Deerfield. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I had a question. My wife posted some china on Craigslist to sell it, and then she got an inquiry back from a gentleman asking some more information on it. And shortly after that, she started receiving emails from various different locations as far as solicitation of prostitution. And we contacted Craigslist on that, and they said that we could contact their internet server, but quite a few of them seem to be foreign posts, and we were just curious if we have to get rid of our email or if there's a way that we can stop this from happening. It's been going on for like a month now.
So this has all been through email, Bob?
Yep.
Okay.
All through Craigslist emails.
Okay.
Yeah, you may want to check with your internet provider and see if they have some suggestions. They may have ideas on how to adjust your spam filters. And if somehow your computer has been infected and they're using you as a kind of a botnet to spam other people, you may have to get another email address.
Okay.
And was Craigslist very helpful, would you say?
My wife actually talked to them, and their suggestion was to just go to each individual internet server that those emails are coming from, but it's coming from multiple different ones, mm-hmm. and it's, you're getting like one, two a day sometimes, so.
Yeah, there may be something you can do under your, whoever provides your internet and email to adjust the filters. Otherwise, do give your internet service provider a call and see what they have to say.
It seems, it seems like that's a lot to ask of the consumer. I mean, Craigslist obviously is not the one sending it, but it's coming through, or it started as a result of them as an intermediary. Sandy, are there any responsibilities that third party like Craigslist has to people using their service?
Well, part of it is customer service,
yeah.
But the other thing is we see a lot of fraud that goes through Craigslist and other online ad sites. So if you're going to post something on Craigslist, make sure that you read through their page on current fraud and scams, because almost everyone I've talked to who has posted an ad for a relatively high-priced item has been contacted by foreign people, on some kind of scam. So understand what you're getting mm-hmm. into.
Well, and maybe this is a little too late for Bob, but maybe when you're preparing to do that kind of, listing something on Craigslist, maybe you create an email address that is just for that. And that way, if it starts getting spammed or if it seems to be compromised, you're not having to let everybody know that you want to be in contact
right.
with to change
and
the email.
And that way, it's easy to shut it down if there is
right.
a problem. It really is a pain to set up a new email account, especially if you bank everything online. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, sorry about that, Bob. And definitely give us an update on how that resolves itself. We're coming up on a news break, but why don't we take this opportunity to repeat some of the information. So if people want to get one of those three free credit reports per year, Sandy, why don't you give that website again?
That is annualcreditreport.com.
Annualcreditreport.com. And the three firms that provide those credit reports are?
Equifax, TransUnion, and the third one I can never remember.
We will
experience. That was a test right there.
That was not very nice to Michelle.
No, that was good.
And the no call list deadline is
May 31st.
Tomorrow.
So yeah, get going on that. And the number for that is 866-9-NO-CALL.
And the number for reporting any kind of complaint, consumer complaint, Michelle?
It's 1-800-422-7128.
So 1-800-422-7128. And the no call is 866-9-NO-CALL. And just in literally the 30 seconds we have left before our news break, we will be back with Sandy and Michelle after that. Are there any areas that your bureau does not handle that people might be kind of lumping under a consumer protection?
There's many umbrella. Areas. It would be too long to list, but we do have a referral guide. So if you're not sure where to go for your issue, please don't be upset if we say, hey, you need to call this place. We do work really hard to get you to the right location the first time on the referral. We have a very thick book to assist us with that.
So if the department is not able to help you, they'll send you where you need to go. Stay tuned for more consumer protection advice after the news. Unless we're living completely off the grid, we act as a consumer probably many times a day, between paying bills for utilities, rent, or a mortgage, purchasing subscriptions or items online, or going out to eat or even buying groceries. There are a lot of transactions in our everyday life. And happily, most go smoothly and we get what we pay for. But those other times when there are problems and we can't get them addressed are really stressful and we often need help to straighten it out. It's great to have knowledgeable and passionate people working on our behalf. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection in the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. Thanks again for being with us today, Sandy.
Thank you.
My
Judith.
Tongue was getting ahead of me. And Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle, it's always a pleasure to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
Well, always lots to talk about for consumer protection and making sure that our identity stays safe and many other issues. And we're happy to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And our on-air producer today, Gabby Pedriani, will be happy to get your calls and emails through to us. Let's go back to the phones and Dan in Monona. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I'm refinancing my house, and when my banker pulled my credit score, he pulled it for all three credit reporting agencies, and it came back 730, 720, and 630. And on the one that was 630, there was a collection that was in error from the Illinois Tollway Authority. And when I called them, to ask why it was on there, and they said, well, you have a zero balance. It might have been a mistake, but you have to call the collection agency to get it cleared up. So I called the collection agency. They verified and actually sent me a letter that there was no balance, but I have gotten nowhere with the credit reporting agency as far as fixing that, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
And Dan, which of the three reporting agencies was that lower credit score on?
I think it was TransUnion.
Okay. Michelle, what do you think?
Well, usually the credit reporting agency has a mechanism, a procedure in which to work on doing a correction if you have bad information on there in a process that you need to go through. If that process isn't working and you've tried to talk to others in the agency and go higher up and that's still not successful, you can file a consumer complaint. I think that the Department of Financial Institutions, the state agency there, would be the appropriate agency, but you could go ahead and file it with our agency, and we'll look in our reference guidebook and make sure we get it to the right source for that correction, that they can intercede on your behalf and assist with that.
And we have a link to the consumer complaint part of the website for the Consumer Protection Bureau up on our website. It's datcp.wic.gov for the general website there. So that would be a good place to start. Now, Sandy, how often does it happen that one of the three credit reports is that different from the other two?
Well, there are from time to time errors in credit reports. And as Michelle said, each credit reporting agency has a set structure for resolving these errors. It's a dispute process, basically. Not too long ago, I saw a segment on 60 Minutes where, you know, people had these horror stories of how they couldn't get a home loan because of these errors, and that's the situation he's in right now. So it's definitely time for him to take the next step and let a state agency intercede in his behalf. We don't know at this point what is underneath. It looks like it should be relatively easy to resolve if it's an Illinois agency who's saying we made a mistake. Mm-hmm.
Well, the IPAS, so that's even part of the Illinois Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. I think. Well, good luck with that, Dan, and let us know how that turns out. We'd be interested to hear a follow-up on that. Paul in Whitewater is next. Hi, Paul.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling in response to comments made by people who had many nuisance calls per day and that they simply could not get them stopped.
Yes.
I found out quite coincidentally that there is a service provided by some telephone companies where you dial *60, and this gets you to a call block. I did not even know this was not even on my bill, and it works like a charm. The limitation to it is that there are only 12 numbers that you can enter to block to prevent them from calling you again. But for those 12 numbers, it works very, very well.
And now, is that just for cell phones, or does that work on landlines as well?
This is working on landlines.
Hmm. Okay.
So, I've never actually tried it on my cell phone.
Okay. And you said, and you have not seen a fee associated with that on your phone bill?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
This is *60.
*60. Sandy, have you heard of that?
That's a really nice tool. What these robocallers will do is just call through an area code repeatedly for a couple of weeks trying to find live numbers, you know, somebody who presses a button. So that can be a great tool when you have those repeated calls. Just be careful. Some carriers will charge you.
Okay.
So check
so
with your
calls
carrier
wasn't,
and see
but
how
another
many.
Might.
He, I think he said he can use up to six, block up to six or 12,
12
numbers.
I think. Mm-hmm.
So just make sure that you know what the charge is for your specific phone carrier.
All right. Thanks for that tip, Paul. It's always great when one caller helps out other listeners. We had a question from Carol in Ellison Bay. She said, we recently got a notice from DirecTV that our receiver was old and that they would be sending us a new one. We received the new equipment, but now we have to pay an extra $10 per month to get the same channels that we had before, and they never warned us about that when they let us know the receiver needed to be replaced. She's wondering if that's legal. What do you think, Michelle?
That's something we'd want you to file a complaint about. If you could go online or call our number, you should be notified with at least 30 days out when there's going to be a fee change that impacts your bill, so you have the option of then canceling the contract that you have as it relates to those increased fees. Do you want to continue when you've had this other contract? So we'd like you to file a complaint so we can be communicating with DirecTV about the practice or notices that they've been giving consumers.
All right. And we also had an email from Pat that says, I downloaded an app from the Apple Store. Within the app, there was a button that billed me. At first, I didn't think it was real money, but it billed me $100 via the Apple Store. I contacted the Apple Store, but never heard back from them. What should I do now?
I would contact them again and be really persistent about this. you may also want to contact the company that offered the app. You know, this is something that you really have to be careful with, especially when you have kids using, playing games on your smartphone, because a lot of those, you know, have ads, and if your thumb slips when one of those ads is displaying, you can be charged a lot of money. And we heard from one parent who whose kids ran up, you know, a bill in the tens of thousands of dollars. So,
wow.
Yeah, pay it another reason to pay attention. But I would contact the Apple Store again, the company whose app it was. And if you don't hear, then please file a complaint with us and we'll mediate in your behalf.
Well, and this kind of goes back to that conversation we started the program with about keeping kids safe online. I mean, it's not just keeping the kids safe. In a way, it's keeping ourselves and our bank accounts safe, too, because a lot of those games you can buy. I mean, you can play them without paying anything, but you can play more fun levels or do more things if you buy little tokens and they look like fake money, but you're using real money to buy them. And if the kids just start clicking on those, I'm not sure. I don't know that a parent would be able to go to a company and say, oops, my kid didn't know that that was real money that they were spending.
You certainly can try it. And, you know, it's similar to parents whose kids run up these exorbitant bills texting, mm-hmm. you know, because they didn't have the right plan. And usually companies will at least make some kind of an adjustment.
Right. We're talking about consumer protection with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Still time for some of your calls before the end of the program. If you give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to Sue in Mequon. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi.
Yesterday, I got a letter in the mail, and it said that I would win two free round-trip plane tickets to any place in the United States. And then I called the phone number, and according to the man I talked to, this is some kind of direct marketing for travel services. And I did sign up to go. It's next Friday, and supposedly I don't have to pay any money and just hear about this service. I do have to bring a charge card just to show that I have a charge card.
All right. Well, let's see what Michelle and Sandy think about that. Michelle?
You're right in that usually when you get this postcard, it is a sales pitch behind the prize. So one thing you may want to do that we encourage consumers to do is when you walk in the door, where's my prize? They should give you the prize before any sales pitch, before you pay any money. There should be no payment for a free prize. If you want to stay and listen to the sales pitch, that's great. If you're interested in some kind of vacation package. But be aware, if you listen to the sales pitch, it's very high pressure. There are lots of things with that sales pitch that you need to just be on alert and consider. How much does the vacation package cost? What are there limitations in when I can use it? Where will I be able to go? Can I do this cheaper myself if I put a package together? Will I be able to stay in the kinds of hotels and quality of hotels or airlines that I am used to? But what we've seen from these postcards is it's a ploy to get you in the door and for them to hard sell. And you often either don't get the prize at the end or the prize is not what they have told you it would be at the end. A lot of blackout dates. So,
well, and also
we'll want to hear about it if you go. We want details.
Yeah, we will want a report back on that too if you go, but don't go just for us. But it also seems, Michelle, like you'd want to make sure that this company is not just a fly-by-night company, because once they have your credit card information, and then if you can't find them or track them down, you're in trouble.
Right. We recently had a case that went to court and has been charged out where it was just this. It enticed consumers to come in based on a postcard. They used branding information that they had no authority to use, hotel information to entice them. They had thousands of dollars worth of consumers, financial information. They were here for 6 weeks and had gotten many consumers involved and not delivered anything to them at this point. So
So be careful with those. Sandy, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, be very skeptical and ask lots of questions. From what we've seen, a lot of these travel club type deals, the deals are not any better than you could get yourself on Travelocity or Orbitz or, you know, at the airline website. So just be very, very skeptical, Sue. And as Michelle said, we'd love to hear from you afterwards.
If you go.
Yeah, please call our 800 number and ask to talk to me if you choose to go and give us some information about it.
And again, that's 800-422-7128. All right. Thanks, Sue. And let's go next to Gary in Rhinelander. Hi, Gary.
Hi. excuse me. What rights do we have against credit agent or collection agencies? My wife's been receiving harassing calls from a credit or a collection agency for about 6 months from an ex-boyfriend about 15 years ago. They keep looking and asking. Since then, she's been married. She got her name changed, of course, and we moved to a different city. We checked her credit report, and there's been no activity on there. Do we have anything we can do about that?
All right. So Gary's wife was probably put down at some point, as when you have to put down like someone close to you, not living with you or something like that?
Yeah, there are laws at both the state and federal level that regulate debt collection agencies and the times of the day they're allowed to call and the number of times per day they're allowed to call. What I suggest that Gary do is call the Department of Financial Institutions that regulates debt collection agencies, and they'll be able to take action on this specific complaint.
Okay, so basically the short answer is that it's not okay that they're getting harassed by this collection agency.
No.
All right, thanks for that call, Gary. We talked about the transient home improvement companies earlier. We also just talked about the free vacation scams that are out there. Another area of current scams is summer jobs. What's going on with that, Michelle? What kind of scams are we seeing?
Well, just in my mailbox today, my work mailbox, there's an envelope where a business is trying to entice college kids into a summer job where they will make big money. There's promises for high delivery, but you need to purchase a kit in order to get involved in this. And that's not fully disclosed in the information. We just know this from our past interactions with the company. So you need to be careful of these promises for big return, for stuffing envelopes, assembling parts and pieces, buying kits in order to make lots of money. If you have to make an investment up front, that should be disclosed to you. If you are going to be assembling stuff, what's the standard for evaluation? What's your investment? How will you get paid? By whom? How much? You need details for all of that information. What personal information do you have to hand over to this company in order to be employed with them? That's another area that we really need to watch for with as it connects to identity theft as well.
Yeah, watch for upfront fees for things like background checks or drug tests, because a legitimate employer will not charge you a fee before
you're
employed.
That's part of their cost of doing business.
Right.
And bringing on new employees. And I've also heard situations where it's a sales opportunity, but you have to buy the inventory up front instead of you sell it and then you place an order and get it. I would think that would be something to take a second look at before you agree to as
well. Yeah, and by law, that has to be disclosed to the prospective employee so you know what you're getting into.
We're talking about consumer protection, and we have a couple lines open. If you'd like to get a question or a comment in, now is the time. You can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post a question or a comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Sandy, what kind of trends have you seen, you know, over the past few years or even longer in what kinds of scams are out there and kind of how people, how have the scammers evolved to try to stay ahead of the consumers?
What we see is that these scammers they follow the news. And it's amazing to me, after large-scale natural disasters, beginning with Hurricane Irene, you know, there were all these fraudulent victims funds. And now after every newsworthy event, it seems like there are either emails that say graphic photos, you know, click here, and then malicious software is downloaded onto your phone, or these fake victims funds or fake charities. But people from all over the world are able to set up domain names, you know, as soon as, right, for instance, after the Boston Marathon bombings, we had a warning from the FBI almost immediately giving the number of domain names with the words Boston Marathon bombing and victims in the web address. Completely just mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. So you really need to be on guard and know what to watch for.
Well, and I think one of the important things is I think we all want to think that we won't be the one to fall for something. But what I always remind myself is that the people on the other end of the scam, this is what they do. This is, you know, they are spending all day, every day thinking of ways to get around, you know, people's natural skepticism and appeal to people on a level that will make us fall for something. And so as much as we want to think we wouldn't be a victim, we shouldn't be so confident.
Right. And one of the characteristics of a fraud victim, remember, was a major event in the life, a death, mm-hmm. divorce. So right there, you're vulnerable to that crook who tries to build a relationship with you. And, you know, we've seen that in the grandparent scams and the sweetheart scams, and, you know, it just goes on mm-hmm. and on.
Mm-hmm. Let's take one more quick call before the end of the show from Dwight in Duluth. Hi, Dwight.
Hello. Hey, I was calling about, I get this email every once in a while for the mystery shoppers
mm-hmm.
where they want, you know, they're going to pay you X amount of dollars to go shop this thing, and then you keep the cash, what's left over.
And give feedback, I think, on the products or on the service you get or something like that.
Exactly.
And so you're wondering if that's legitimate or not?
Yeah, I mean, most all of those scams.
Okay. Michelle?
Well, there are legitimate secret shopper programs, and those are usually set up where you are a frequent shopper of a particular store, and they reach out to you and ask if you'd be willing to be a secret shopper for them. But the kinds that just come out of nowhere to secret shop will pay you X money and you get to keep the difference. What's your investment in that? It usually exceeds the amount of money they'll pay you, or the check that they send you isn't legit. It's a fake check. And so you go out and do this shopping, spend your money, or then later it's, oh, return me this amount of money. And it turns into a fake check scam as well as a secret shopper type enticement to get you involved. So you need to look at all that fine print detail. What's your investment, both time and money and resource, and providing your personal information in order to be involved in this.
So like anything, you know, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Yep. You just need to constantly remind yourself there's no real quick way to get it done.
Well, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, as always, great information to help us all be smarter and safer consumers. Thanks so much for spending the time with us.
Thanks, Judith.
Thank you.
And just to remind you, the deadline for getting on the no-call list this quarter is tomorrow, and you can do that by calling 866-9-NO-CALL. Also, for general information or to file a complaint, 800-422-7128. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you'll stay tuned for a lot more great programming on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.